This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Haitian immigrants who helped lift up a North Carolina town are facing deportation. Mount Olive is a small North Carolina community known for its university, its pickles, and for being home to the largest turkey processing plant in the world, Butterball. In 2010, the town's population was dwindling, but a wave of Haitian immigrants authorized to work under a temporary protected status started moving into the area. They were attracted by work at the Butterball plant. Those immigrants have now become an important part of the cultural and economic life of the town. But this Thanksgiving may have been their last in Mount Olive. Donald Trump wants to end their protective status and send them back to Haiti. Damian Paletta is a senior economics correspondent for The Washington Post. He's been tracking the stories of these families and joins us now. Damian, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about this protected status granted to Haitians living in the U.S. What's that all about?
Sure. This program is called TPS, and it's actually extended to people from a number of different countries, including Nicaragua, Sudan, El Salvador. And it was extended to Haitians in the United States shortly, you know, within a few days after the earthquake in 2010. The idea was that, you know, even though these Haitians in the U.S. were here working illegally, there's really no economy for them to go back to in Haiti. It would be even more of a humanitarian crisis if they were sent back. So they were allowed to temporarily stay in the United States and work, you know, and these permits were for like a year or 18 months at a time. And then the U.S. would continue to reevaluate the situation in Haiti, and then they could go back when things improved. Well, things never really improved that much. And so this protected status has been renewed several times. Now for 8 years, these people have been in the United States working. Almost all of them, there's 59,000 Haitians with this status in the U.S. Almost all of them are employed in some different field. And their status would expire in July of 2019. If it's not renewed, and the White House has said it does not plan to renew it, then they would all face deportation, you know, by next summer.
All right, you talked about the number in the United States. About how many came to North Carolina?
Well, there were several thousand, and you know, I talked to people in this small town in eastern North Carolina, and it felt to them like they came almost overnight. Word of mouth spread quickly that there were jobs in eastern North Carolina. A lot of the Haitians had been congregating in southern Florida, and you know, this is just a few years after the peak of the financial crisis. It was still hard to find good jobs in Florida. So when they found out that there was good paying jobs in North Carolina, affordable place to live, you know, friendly community, they just moved up almost all at once. And so the community was transformed. This was an area that, you know, had a lot of, you know, dilapidated houses and is, you know, kind of needed this new injection of workers. And they saw it so quickly. The company obviously needed workers, too. They're always trying to hire. This is not glamorous work, working at a turkey processing plant. And so there was kind of this, you know, quick symbiosis where everyone kind of came together. There were definitely growing pains. There was a huge, you know, cultural gap, language barrier. You know, I talked to some people who said that women would walk back from the grocery store with their groceries balanced on their head, just like they did in Haiti. It sort of took some getting used to each other. But I think there was a sense that it could work if everyone kind of put an effort into it.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to spotlight this a little bit more, this reception, because you said that they one of the things they reported, in addition to the jobs, was the fact that there was this friendly reception. I mean, initially, there was there a clash initially? Obviously, we're going to talk more about how integrated they've become and how vital they've become to the economy and the cultural life there. But initially, things were smooth as well, or relatively smooth?
I think there was some initial confusion, but I talked to the town manager, Charles Brown, who really went out of his way. It was interesting. He had actually visited Haiti some years before and knew of the conditions of that country even before the earthquake. And he was sympathetic to the kind of world that they were leaving behind. But, you know, there were some definite issues. For example, he got a call a few months after a lot of the Haitians moved to Mount Olive that there was 25 people living in a single house. You know, those are things that just don't, that, you know, violate the code of the town. Yeah. And so the town had to sort of look at that. Also, Haitians weren't used to, like, taking your trash out to the curb, you know, every Tuesday. There was, like, basic things like that. And so they had to deal with that and get through it. But I think they felt like if if they put in the effort, it would be worth it.
Yeah, but they,
it was
they,
also interesting.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, they also had this issue where the Haitians, you know, very religious, you know, culture, they didn't have a place to worship. So they were going to one of the local Baptist churches, and they, you know, quickly made clear that they would love to have their own church. And the local, the town of Mount Olive helped find them a building that they could worship in. Next thing you know, there were six Haitian churches in Mount Olive that are just pumping and thriving every Sunday.
So whatever glitches there were in sort of cultural, you know, disparities, dissonance there might have been initially, and the stuff got worked out. Now, the jobs. Let's talk about this Butterball processing plant. This is the place that was the big job generator. Tell us more about the Butterball.
That's right. They have about 3,000 jobs there. At any given time, there can be up to 23 different languages spoken on the floor of the processing plant. This is a huge facility that produces about 500 million pounds of turkey a year. They're constantly trying to recruit new workers, though. It's such a challenge because it is very cold there. You know, like I said, the work is not glamorous. It's very hard work. Even now, they're trying to hire 100 new workers a week. So the fact that they found all these workers, people who were here legally and able and willing to, you know, work all kinds of different shifts at the plant was a big godsend for the company. And even though, you know, now the numbers are a bit less than they were at the peak several years ago of Haitian workers at Butterball, we're still talking several hundred Haitian workers and 44 people with this specific protected status. And the company doesn't know how they would replace them if they all got sent back to Haiti next summer.
Specific stories of Haitians who are living in Mount Olive. Tell us about Jean-Félix Petit Frère.
Yeah, it was a fascinating story. Very kind of shy, mild guy. He grew up in a neighborhood outside Port-au-Prince called Croix de Bouquet. He came to the United States in December 2009, just a few weeks before the earthquake, and you know, immediately got temporary protected status, was allowed to work here legally, but couldn't find a job in southern Florida. So he heard through word of mouth that there were jobs at Butterball. He moved up to North Carolina, and he's been working there ever since. Now, he left behind his wife of 37 years and his four children. And he's been sending almost everything he gets in his paycheck back to Haiti so that they've used that money, his family, to build a new house, an earthquake-proof house, which kind of stands apart from a lot of the slums and the shanty houses, you know, in the outskirts of Port-au-Prince. He misses his family terribly, but at the same time, he's earning more in 1 hour at Butterball than he would earn in a week in Haiti. So it's really difficult for him.
Tell us more about that, because you actually went to Haiti and explored the area where Jean-Félix lives, right? So tell us about what
exactly
that place looks like.
Yeah. I mean, so I had done a semester abroad in Africa when I was, you know, in university. I've kind of traveled through third world countries a lot. I've never seen anything like Haiti before. It was very jarring to see the amount of poverty and the hopelessness, you know, everywhere. You know, disease, still lack of medical care. And so going out to his family's house, even in the house is unfinished, but it looks like a palace compared to, you know, the houses around them. And it's really created this kind of base for his family, you know, to be together. He's got grandchildren, and they all kind of live in this kind of safe environment. And he's been able to piece together, you know, with his earnings as a kind of a janitorial worker at Butterball. You know, is it hopeful? Perhaps, you know, they have this house in this area to be together, but at the same time, it is Haiti. You know, anything could happen, and they're only as safe as kind of the way things are going on any given day.
No, but if you think about the model that you've described here, this is a kind of a sustainable economic model that uses, in fact, market principles, right? These are people generating economic activity in Mount Olive, which, as you said, had been starting to fall down on its luck a little bit. The population had dwindled. It generates economic activity there, then generates economic activity back in Haiti. It sort of obviates the need for some of the aid programs that seem to recycle through and never seem to create much good. I mean, just on the surface of it, it's only one example, but it's a fascinating prospect anyway.
Right. And the more improvements that they could make in Haiti, the less likely people are going to be to try to flee Haiti and come here. So, right, there is a mutual benefit that I think they all have received.
Meanwhile, the president of the United States has referred to Haiti, among other countries, as an S-hole country. We have to live with that now. But the fact is, he is pandering to his base and constantly sort of trying to prove that he will push all of these people back to their countries. What does this mean now? I mean, this is something, I guess it's an executive prerogative not to extend this status, right? I mean, if Donald Trump says go home, I guess that's what happens, huh?
Exactly. I mean, the White House's position is this program was always meant to be temporary. And, you know, it's 8 years after the earthquake. The conditions in Haiti were awful before the earthquake. You know, no one can expect things to be perfect. And so this program should be ended. It was interesting spending time with Gene Felix and others who work at Butterball and who are here under this program. They, while they've been here for 8 years and they have settled into the community and they're members of the church and they shop at the local grocery stores and stuff, being in their houses and even in their bedrooms, you did get the sense that they feel like this could all change overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, they have not, there's no decorations. Things are kind of packed in suitcases and laundry baskets. It's almost like they always have one foot here and one foot back home, because I think they know that this can't go on forever. But there has really been no thinking that has gone into what would happen. Can you send 59,000 people back to an incredibly impoverished country overnight? You know, what would that do to Haiti? What would that do to these towns like Mount Olive that are kind of relying on this labor? No one's kind of put thought into that. And so it would be incredibly disruptive, you know, in multiple countries.
Damian Paletta, senior economics correspondent with The Washington Post. Damian, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You can find links to his work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we talked to a guest who says our system of philanthropy may be making things even worse. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.